Hey everybody, this is Rob Halford wishing you all a crazy heavy metal Christmas and an insane, wild, manic New Year!
All right there, metalheads, welcome to yet another episode of Focus on Metal, our very special holiday episode, if you will, and in the studio with me tonight,
ho ho ho,
oh my god, it's a blast from the past. Jay has once again stepped foot in Bedlam Studios and on the show. How are we doing, man?
I'm okay.
Man, how long has it been?
I think about a year or so.
I think so. I was actually going to hit up Vic and be like, Vic, what's going on? So I can have Jay come back on.
I've been hitting Vic up.
Have you?
Yeah, because you know I still have the second Facebook account.
Yeah.
And I log in once every, 18 million years or so. And I always hit up Bill Peters and Vic and Ken Erb and say, how's it going? And last I heard, they're doing 12 songs. They're about halfway done doing it themselves. Slow going process.
But yeah,
they're expecting 2015 release for the tour over in like Germany or something. Wow. So
yeah, I mean, but those first two songs are like, oh my God.
Yeah, it was a teaser.
Yeah.
No one even knows what I'm talking about. Unless I heard that episode a year ago. But, Shock Paris, of course.
Yeah.
And I was a huge fan back in the 80s and 90s even. And they kind of just disappeared after three albums and, Facebook, magic of media and stuff brought us all together. And, I'm very happy to hopefully hear a CD next year sometime.
I know.
I'm dying for it.
But yeah, the other day I was looking through and I was like, I got to get a hold of Vic. I got to find out what the hell's going on with this. So
he's going to say, yo, brother, it's taken a long time. We're financing ourselves kind of thing. That's all he tells me, he says it's coming out good, but it's coming out slow kind of thing. So.
Awesome.
Yeah, well, feel free to hit them up.
I will,
More cool. Pressure, maybe it gets a little quicker. Who knows?
Maybe. That'd be cool. Yeah, that'd be great to finally get some new Shock Paris out there. I mean, those first two he let us hear.
I think I had four songs. I think you might have given me a couple. You might have heard them, too. A couple were still in demo state. A couple of them kind of almost done.
I think he sent you a couple other ones afterwards.
They weren't quite done, but I could hear the direction they were going, And actually, one of them sounded more like Aftershock.
Yeah.
The band was in with only the one guitarist kind of thing. But the other ones, I mean, that was Shock Paris, and I was just drooling,
To
hear it. And I certainly hope that the other, 9 or 10 tracks, or they do, are along the same lines, because they were just on fire with those.
They were, absolutely. All right, so why don't we kick into a little track of the week, and from there we'll get into the business at hand.
Oh, boy.
We'll be right back.
All right, there we go. A little bit of a holiday cheer from our buddies in American Dog. And, of course, you can head up to their website and, what's that, americandog.us. Pick up that. That's from their Merry Christmas Asshole EP. And you probably remember Michael Hannon discussing that with us. And I thought, you know, you got to love a metal band that's got a EP called Merry Christmas Assholes. And of course, you know, when he promised about that, we were talking about it. He did talk about, you know, going and making that video. And that video is on their website for that song, as well as up on YouTube. So check that out. And I'll try to remember to put the links in the show notes as well. But of course, right now, got Jay back in the house, and he had hit me up about, you know, topics or whatever. And, you know, we've been on this streak of never ending streak, really, of interviews, even to the point that people have been giving Richie and I shit about, when are you going to do the fourth episode of Saxon? Like, we've been waiting like a year now. But Jay came up with this out of the blue topic, and I went, holy crap, like, that's a holiday episode right there.
It was literally out of the blue. I was at work last week, got a new PC. Mm-hmm. Long story short, I was kind of bored setting up the new PC and went over to the website and just kind of thumbed through and picked up whatever episode it was, when the singer leaves the band kind of thing. Yeah. And just started thinking about just doing stuff again. And, you know, Trans-Siberian's always been one of my favorites and for holidays and, yeah, and in the holiday spirit is right now.
Sure.
And just said, you know, hit you up kind of thing. And after I hit you up and you agreed, I realized something that I just don't have the knowledge about this stuff. I like the music, but, you know, as I've learned, you've gotten deeper into this as the years have gone on than I have. And I'm kind of locked in a little time zone of you know, after the band, after our band and stuff, and just enjoying certain bands for a certain amount of time. And I just don't get into the new stuff like you do, because you're doing it, you know, for the show more than anything.
Sure.
And I get excited about a new release maybe once a year, seriously. Uh-huh. Shock Paris is the one I'm waiting for at this point.
Right.
A couple of those will pop up, I'm sure, you know. But I think the last one I really enjoyed, the last new release, was probably the last Van Halen. I was here for, we talked about
that. We did.
That.
We did.
And that's well over a year ago at this point.
Oh, yeah.
That's going on 2 years at this point, I think.
Yeah.
So that's like one of the last new releases that I really, you know, get super excited about.
Right.
Pretty amazed I hear the new ones come out, and I like them. It's not like it used to be for me. Anyway, go off track as usual.
But there's enough essence of that, I thought, of the new Pretty Maids, that I'd be like, ah, I think Jay will get into this.
No, it's not. I'm off track here totally. The point is, you know.
That's what we always end up doing.
The point here, I guess, is, you know, you've been doing a lot more, you know, the bands now, the people in the bands, the gear they use, their mom and dad is, their cat's name and everything, and. You know, I just like track 3 on CD that came out in 1987 kind of thing. So we'll see what I can add to this show. I'm not sure.
You always add stuff. So
I just added the off track already.
I think a lot of times you just like, there's probably shit you know, you just forgot you knew as well. So it is cool. And I think that too, you know, you talk about being kind of trapped in that one thing, but there's definitely a lot of people that are in our audience that they like that. You know, they're
like, but it gets old. No one wants to hear me bitch about, you know, the new stuff coming out. I'm not into it. And I mean, you've gotten into power metal. You've actually exceeded. I was an Exodus fan before you even probably listened to them, and you've well exceeded, you know, what I listened to for like Exodus and the thrash metal scene, even heavier thrash.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I was, when I joined the band, I was a thrash guy.
You were definitely down picking all the way.
You knew the stuff. You know, you knew the bands, but now you know more information about all that than I've let it all go. You know, I've had other things come up that kind of didn't push me in that direction.
Yeah.
So I'll never get back into it. It's too much to get into at this point. But I always liked TSO when they came out. The funny story, of course, was when I first heard it was Christmas Eve Sarajevo in like 97 on like MTV.
Okay.
I might have been radio, actually. It was a radio. It wasn't MTV, it was a radio. And I remember I was listening to it. This sounds so familiar. I couldn't picture it. I didn't realize it was on, you know, Dead Winter Dead.
Yeah.
But more importantly, I recognized the sound.
Yeah.
And I literally, like, called, I think it was Best Buy or Circuit City, you know, and flew up from, I was in Hampton, New Hampshire, flew up to Portsmouth, whatever.
Yeah.
Picked up the CD, came home, opened the liner notes, started reading the people's names in the band. I'm like, this is Sabotage.
Yeah.
You know? And I thought it was funny. And, you know, as John Oliver would always say, he's kind of had a bad feeling about or bad thing about how Sabotage was this great band he was in, but no one liked them because of the name or the content. They switched the name, same exact producer, same exact sound, same exact everything.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, grandma's up there listening to Trans-Siberian Orchestra. So I can see the frustration with a name change doing that, but I appreciate it.
You know? I mean, he'd even, you know, one of the, I always love that, I'll paraphrase it, but, you know, people have asked John countless times, about, you know, Sabotage Reunion. And I'm pretty sure that when I talked to him, I didn't ask him that, but he's always had the thing of, you know, well, why aren't you doing it? And he'd be, well, you know,
there's no money.
Sabotage sold as many goddamn records as TSO.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be having this discussion.
It's a little thorn in the side that, you know, like it's like a little sore spot.
But right.
I think I heard a rumor that they were going to do one more album, by the way. Sabotage, that is.
I don't know. The most concrete thing I've heard lately is that they were going to do, that TSO was going to play Wacken and that Sabotage would do a set at Wacken. But that was it.
Well, you know, that goes. They hear the music that they made a long time ago and get that little wild thing that kicks off in the back of the head. And who knows if it's not tainted enough.
I don't know. I mean, the stuff that John put out, earlier this year, his solo album stuff. I think it's close enough to what they were doing. In fact, a lot of it, you know, there's good chunks of it. When I talked to him, he was telling me about little bits and pieces like, oh, that was something that Chris and I wrote when we were 16 and stuff like this. There's a lot of that in there. So,
you know, what's funny. What I actually like and don't like about that is you can listen to John Oliver Payne album or something, and it just sounds like Sabotage, which is good, but bad because you want it to sound like his signature.
Right.
But you can definitely hear the Sabotage in there, but it's not Sabotage. So to me, it's like, it's that distinction of, you know, it's the voice, the guitars and drums all sound about the same, but it's not the same players kind of thing. So
I think what's interesting with when you hear that is that you look through all of my voice is still messed up this week. You listen to all of the Sabotage catalog and you can hear where John gets more on the keyboards, more orchestral. And it's about the same time that we also lose Chris right about that same time too, you know?
I don't know. Hall of the Mountain King is where their signature sound started, in my opinion.
Which is what, 87.
87,
yeah.
Sounded with them,
right?
When just but that it whole isn't,
it still doesn't hit really to me. I don't think it really still hits until Streets.
Well, that's when the rock opera
that's
started.
When it really branches off. But you definitely do have, and again, though, that's John, not bass. I think, you know, more full keyboards. You really start to hear that, and the sound, you're right, it gets smoother.
So you had,
but I put that in the context too, because we've had this discussion of 87, right? I mean, what 87. Sonically, 87 changes.
Yes.
So you listen to
Whitesnake album. Yeah. The Whitesnake album is the one that definitively changed metal rock.
Right.
Music.
So I listen back, and again, it's the privilege of going back in time and listening to it with different eyes. But if you listen to everything that ears, thank you. It's the sickness that everything that came before Hall. it has that rougher edge.
It was thin, it's thin sound. Well, let me take that back. The first two albums, the first one especially.
Sirens, yeah.
No, well, all right, I forgot that because Sirens was actually first. And then help me out. The Dungeons of Calling. Dungeons of Calling had the riffs and had the metal edge of it.
Yeah.
Okay, but Sirens wasn't quite that. I love them both.
Yeah.
Then they had Fight for the Rock and Power of the Night.
Power of the Night. Thank you.
Those two are thin sounding, but I really enjoy a lot of the music on there.
Yeah.
You know, there's keyboard parts on there. There's kind of a couple of covers here and there. But
I think the guitars, though, on there really do punch through.
They do because nothing else did.
Right. And if you think about that in the context of what everybody else was doing at that time,
85?
There was a lot of thin-sounding things then, but it was guitars that really... So when I listen to that, I think of going back to some of the first Dio albums and things like that. And... to me, they sound sonically not that far apart.
No, they're all thin.
Yeah.
All thin sounding.
And then you get 87 Sage. Right.
But, you know, it's actually funny. It took a downstep, in my opinion, with Gutter Ballet as far as sound went.
Yeah.
Adding Chris Caffrey, and no knock on him, because that's actually my favorite Savatage album. I just love that album. That was the one that really, really got me behind Savatage.
Okay.
You know? And then what came after that? I think, was Streets after that? And was that...
Yeah, I think that was Streets after that.
Yeah, and then, of course, the accident with, you know, with Chris and stuff. And mm-hmm. then they just, I kind of didn't appreciate the new rendition with Zach on
vocals
and Stevens, Alex Goldner coming in and stuff. It was good songs, good stuff, but I didn't appreciate the albums as much. I really like John's voice.
Yeah.
I really missed that.
Yeah.
So when he came back for Dead Winter Dead for two tracks, I love that. As a matter of fact, his tracks are the best, in my opinion, those albums, you know. And then of course, with Wake of Magellan, the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I really, actually, even with Zach, really enjoyed Wake of Magellan.
Yeah.
But that's when, at that point, TSO was already, you know, 98. There were already two albums in at that point.
Yep.
And you know, they're, so there was kind of a mix of just everything sounded, TSO and Savatage were, in my opinion, the same band.
Yeah.
You know, similar artwork even, you know.
Yeah. True.
But I don't know. I just, I love most of the catalog from Savatage.
Yeah.
It's just those two or three albums in between where, you know, Chris was gone and they're trying to figure it out.
There was definitely some unsettled stuff where, you know, people didn't really stay around for more than an album kind of a thing, you know, would it have fleshed out more if you know, Chris and John or Alex and John would have worked longer and stuff. And you got to figure, though, too, that, you know, here's Chris and John, you know, as kids, I mean, doing this, working together, being in each other's brain and all that. Not only do you lose, like, kind of your musical partner, but you lost your brother, too. It had to be incredibly tough for him to do anything.
To me, it showed in the music, to be honest.
Yeah.
John's absence with the band, other than maybe some writing here and there.
And the subject matter. I mean, when you look at all of the song titles right up to there. Yeah. There, and then you go all of a sudden to, you
Hunting
know,
Cobras and, yeah.
Yeah, you know, all that, you know, any of that, you just reading the titles,
and,
you know, so you kind of look and go, okay, and if someone just put those titles in front of you and didn't tell you what kind of bands they were, you go, okay, yeah, that's probably a metal band. Well, this is probably was a grunge band or something, you know what I mean? Because it was really that... You know, you read the title and go, oh, geez, is this like real shoegaze? And
well, you know, I don't mean to throw Zach under the bus there. I just, his vocal style is strong.
Uh-huh.
And it's more of the power metal band.
It is.
And, you know, I don't like power metal bands that much. There's very few that I really
Yeah, you don't like that whole tonality, that temperament, and that voice.
It just sounds like, actually, to be honest, it sounded like he was holding back what he could really do on an album when you listen to it. It's like he just gives a much more stronger voice. No, I didn't want it.
Yeah.
I didn't want stronger. I wanted... raspy. I wanted rough. You know, I wanted the...
Well, John's got a very bombastic voice.
Oh, his voice.
And it fits that.
It is.
You know what I mean?
It's great.
It is like he is like the Mountain King. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. But you know what's funny? As we're going to TSO, I mean, we're kind of lumping TSO as TSO, but I'm actually referring to three Christmas albums.
Yeah.
The Beethoven thing and the
Night Castle. And
you know, to me, that's that belongs on Broadway. I think they wrote it for stage. I really, as much as the music is identical to everything else, I just can't get behind it as much.
Right.
And I've tried, and I hate the fact that I can't because
right.
I really want to enjoy it. I just can't.
Yeah,
like I can the others. I'm not saying it's bad.
I mean, it is good. Totally it's just different, not, though. I mean, like you said, it is almost a music for presentation, you know, how does this fit into our bigger grand scheme of presenting this stuff?
If I have to say what I really feel about it, I say TSO is between late October, early November and mid January.
Yeah.
As far as Christmas album goes, what are we going to do for the rest of the year? Let's make this other symphony stage stuff that we can do stage things. And that's to me what Night Castle and Beethoven's, Last Night was.
The other thing that's kind of, when you talk about TSO now, I haven't seen them with the new production yet, but the old production.
I will Saturday.
Yeah, lucky you.
My first concert in like a decade, literally.
Wow.
Not even joking.
But, the other one, and maybe it was easier for me because I was familiar with, one, most of the people that were on stage and what else they did.
Yeah.
But also, Dead Winter Dead and, all the origin part of it. But it kind of meshed the two parts of the show. The beginning one with all the families in their Christmas dresses and blah, 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 and seeing all this, pretty stuff. But to me, it was not that far of a jump off from when they did that to the intermission to when they come back out again and start jamming out on all kinds of stuff. It was close, but I'm almost thinking that what you're going to see is going to feel a lot more disparate to you. Or you're going to kind of see probably this more Broadway than rock show.
I thought I read they were doing the Christmas Attic in like its entirety this year or something. I don't really care. I mean, it's gonna be a Christmas show,
right?
And it's not. There's two production companies. I'm not gonna have all the artists playing that I expect to have, and all the songs I want to hear. Probably not the same singer of whatever, but I'm sure it'll be great, and she'll enjoy it, and she'll be colorful and whatever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they put on. I mean, it's insane what they put on.
Oh, yeah?
I just think, for me, it was like, it wasn't that much different between part A to part B. You know what I mean?
It's funny. The first Christmas Eve and Other Stories, when they came out in 96, I got 97, I mentioned. But I was through like a QVC show or something, the QVC station, store. I ran across a dual CD.
Okay.
It had the narrative version of that very same song.
Yeah.
Very same album, sorry. Right. One track, 60-something minutes, 70 minutes, whatever it was. When you listen to it, it puts you in a different mindset than listening to the
album itself, yeah.
And it starts off as being a person in the Old City Bar.
Right.
Where when you listen to it without the narration, it just sounds like, God sending an angel down, try to find me something cool going on down on earth kind of thing. You know, and the story progresses from there.
Yeah.
It changes the whole story. And I've come to learn they did that with, I think it was with Christmas Attic, it might have been, that they did narration. I might get this wrong. Someone's probably yelling right now. No, it's the other album. No, but one of the other two albums, they redid it with, they remastered it with a couple extra tracks, I might add, and a narration.
Yeah.
I don't have that one yet.
Yeah.
But there's other variations of those albums out there.
Right. So
people know in case they want to run out and try to find it.
Yeah. It is a bizarre concept though, right? I mean, I got to see John's point. He put out Dead Winter Dead, and...
Well, stop. What is it called? Dead Winter Dead. It's not mainstream, and I understand.
No. But, I mean, it's the same damn song. You know what I mean?
It's literally the same song.
You couldn't have sold it if you were attaching it as a free coupon to an Asian hooker. Asian hooker!
Well, I might have bought that.
But, it's... And then they put it out as this other thing, and people think it's the most wonderful thing. And you go to see the show, and there's all these families there, and you look around, and you are like, Grandma would never allow you to put a Sabotage album on.
But stop for a minute. Look at when we were playing together. Do you remember what, I won't call it rules, because I wasn't really the rule maker in the band, but what my thought was about a band.
Yep.
My thought was, if a girl's not dancing...
Uh-huh.
Mind you, I'm the metal fan in the band. I'm the thrash metal of this 1992 three time frame.
Yeah.
Slayer, Megadeth, all that shit.
Yeah.
And I want to play grunge songs that I hate. Why? Because that's what gets people coming to see you.
Yeah.
That's what gets people enjoying your music. That's what gets you to slip an original here and there.
Oh, yeah.
That's what gets people dancing.
Oh, yeah.
No one's going to dance to Angel of Death.
No, I know.
And then we turn into one of our songs or something right behind it.
Yeah, our biggest one that got people up was Hassle-Free.
Hassle-Free did it. But, that's just my, so I guess my rule was, or my thought was, you kind of step back and go with the mainstream. What if Van Halen was really named, Digging Corpses?
Yeah.
They wouldn't have done anything.
Yeah.
Great guitarist, thrash metal band, no one would want any part of them. You know, and they're one of the bands that started the whole hard rock, heavy metal guitar movement in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, as far as I'm concerned, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
The Guitar Hero thing, you know?
Sure.
But I think the name goes a long way, and TSO found that out, you know? Put on a tuxedo,
yeah.
You know? Something about God and Christmas and some story about snow and stuff, and put a jingle bell, and you're in.
See, even when I first heard, you know, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, it was like, what the hell is that?
Yes.
You know what I mean? And, you know, this is also at a time when, you know, it was still, you know, Evil Empire and stuff, too. You know, it was like, well, you know, what is this kind of thing? So, I don't know. To me, even that name sounded odd. Sabotage, to me, was kind of a, I don't know, compared to a lot of other metal bands, it almost sounded kind of a rather innocuous name to me.
Yeah, it does, but you look at the album Dead Winter Dead. An average person that's trying to find a hard rock albums, and I look at that, look at the album cover, see a gargoyle on it, you know, go, what's this kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I enjoy it. I enjoy the artwork, and to me, when I was buying albums blindly in the 80s,
because
there was no kiosk stations, there was no sampling, there was no Amazon, there was none of that shit.
Right.
So I would look at what label they were on and make a decision on that. I could have four albums in my hand, shitty artwork or whatever, weird names, look at track titles, look at the guys look like with the picture in the back.
Right.
And more importantly, is this Combat? Is this Atlantic? Is this, God forbid, Scotty Brothers? I mean, that's the kiss of death right there. You know, but I would look at that and take it into consideration. It's like, who are they trying to sound like? Who are they trying to, you know, mimic or whatever? And made decisions on that.
Yeah, you know? But of course, too, you know, the other thing is you were primarily buying a lot of cassettes, too,
yes,
right?
Yes, cassette.
Right. But so,
well, no, early 80s, mid 80s, but by the time the 90s came out, I was CD.
But if we're looking at the bin, I mean, you'd see that one and go, okay, Dead Winter Dead, all right, Gargoyle.
Well, that was 96. That was definitely, I'm definitely CD.
But if you're looking through the rest of those things under Sabotage, you're like, oh, okay, well, like, you know,
yeah, a couple down here.
You know, the Hiroshima deal, like, okay, that looks like a typical metal cover. And,
that's,
you know,
Hiroshima.
The, no, not here. What is that?
Iwo Jima.
Iwo Jima, thank you. You know, but you look at, you know, you look that's at some of the other ones, right?
That's the Fight for the Rock album cover, by the way.
Yes, right, exactly. You know, you got with the Fist. I mean, okay, the Sirens one, that's going to throw you off. Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of Elf thing. I'm not sure about that one.
That's just a bad metal album, bad metal cover.
Yeah, so if you look, so if the only other two that were in the bin was Streets and Sirens, you might go,
Streets had a really shitty cover, too.
That's what I mean. Yeah. You're looking going, okay, Streets, a rock opera. Yep. What kind of cover is this? But if you saw things like Hall and things, you'd be...
We didn't call it the most obvious one, Dungeons of Colin. It's like some weird skull kind of thing on there. And obviously promoting...
Yeah, what is that thing going in the eyeball?
I gotta go look at it. I didn't bring it with me. But, you know, it's one of those things where that's a thrash metal band.
Yeah.
And the first one, the first Sirens, looking at that, it reminds you a lot of album covers that would come out on the Combat label at the time. Kind of artwork not perfected yet. It's obviously a metal band.
Yeah.
You know, you flip over, read the song titles. Okay, maybe not. You know.
Yeah. Right.
But I'd see the label and go, well, it's definitely not. You know, what is it? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah!
I backfilled my catalog. That wasn't my first one. I think my very first one was Hall of the Mountain King. That was my first
exposure. Yeah, and that would have had a wider distribution, too.
Well, that was my time frame, 86, 87, yeah. 87. You know, I was getting into metal more, getting out of Kiss stuff, more into metal. I was in the thrash metal. It was kind of backfilling with the progressive metal at that mm-hmm. point. And, you know, Joe Satriani's were kicking in at that point, and like, Lion and whatever else come out at yeah. that time. And a friend brought that in one day at school, a cassette, so a little, you know, yeah. little album cover in the cassette. And what is that? You know, they borrowed it for the night or whatever and enjoyed it. And at some point in time, don't know when, ended up buying it. But that's the one that started me down the Sabotage road.
Yeah. I mean, yep. I mean, it's definitely, that's a killer starting point, too. I mean, that one there, John's voice and everything behind it, you're just kind of like,
was just, you know,
oh my God, this is like the most powerful band on earth kind of thing.
That's when they got into the Volkswagen and stepped into the Ferrari. You know?
Yeah.
And that just became the car. That
right.
became the driving force of what they were going to do from that point forward.
And yeah.
It was great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I mean, you got to wonder how much, you know, if they're, production process for Hall was in place, you know, and that kind of sound in general existed before then, like how big some of those other albums would have sounded.
That was the first one that was produced by Kinkle,
Robert right? Kinkle,
That was the first album, I believe, that he produced for Sabotage.
I think you're right.
So his symphonic sound or his vision for that
right.
sound just kind of kicked in with technology at that point. And
yeah.
That became the sound.
Yeah, you know? But I would think that, you know, for the most part, anyone that would have produced that album that year would have been somewhere down that road.
Not sure.
As long as it was post Whitesnake's 87 album, because pretty much everything after that,
yeah, that just changed.
Took that blueprint. Yeah. I mean, even
that was a game changer.
Yeah, I mean, even at that point, yeah, that was almost considered to be popular music. But you know, everything was doing that.
Even Dokken. You're Lynch fan, Dokken fan. They, under Lock and Key, was that cusp album where it sounded great, still not quite there.
Right.
And then Back for the Attack, which is a few years later. Sudden, boom, whole different sound, longer album. You know, that was my first long album. Because back then, albums were 45 minutes.
Sure.
That was right. 55, 54 minutes, something like that. That one in Tesla, Great Radio Controversy, the two longest cassettes, CDs at that time for me that I actually enjoyed.
Yeah.
Because I don't like stuff that's 70 minutes long anymore, 65.
Right.
I want 40, 45 minutes and done.
Yeah. And that's kind of where, you know, one thing Richie's always said too is, you know, when you get these long albums, it's kind of like, it's too many songs on it for me. I don't want that many songs.
Not good anymore. First of all, you know oh, getting way off track again.
We do.
But
see how easy it was to get back in the groove?
We actually had this conversation, I think, before. You know, when CDs came out, I was very pissed off with $20-something for 45 minutes worth of music.
Yeah.
I want my full 80 minutes. As soon as I started filling it, I didn't want it anymore.
Yeah.
I didn't want the 8-minute song that sucked, you know, surrounded by maybe one or two songs that were good. I wanted the 8 to 10 songs I tried real hard for that were 4 minutes long each or whatever the variation was of that.
Yeah.
And had me interested to hear it again right away.
Yeah.
And most albums, it was like, I don't even want to get through this. I'm just done right now. And you never get past track 8, for example, you know?
Yeah. Well, some of the episodes, if you listen to some of them, you'll hear me whenever we do some of the track of the week stuff. And I talk about a certain band and the album. And a lot of times I do make the comment, you know, like Jay would like this. It's this classic 45, 50 minutes. You can almost envision two sides, how they'd fit in, all that. It's like that.
Five tracks each
side. Yeah, it's always stuck with me as that classic
lead in hard
format.
Yeah.
And there's definitely a lot of bands out of Europe are releasing a lot of them that are that kind of time frame.
Yeah. My son Drake, and he's 17 now.
Yeah.
He actually went into Pink Floyd. He's a huge Pink Floyd fan now. Full box set, all everything. The new album came out. He's all into it, you know. And he wasn't an album person until I told him he was listening to music wrong.
Yeah,
you know, I told him he's listening to music wrong, and you know, there really isn't a correct way to. But
right. In
my opinion, you had a cassette or an album, or you know, album for you back in your day, cassette for me, and then CD. You have to flip it over. You have to have the definitive A B side. That cassette, even switching sides, was. It's the beginning, here's an end. Oh, look, beginning and end again.
Yeah.
CD was beginning and end with nothing in between. That kind of took away some of it.
Right.
You know, but he'd pick a song here and there. Next thing I know, he's listening to metal or, you know, or Animals or something. And he's listening to the full album, front to back, you know, through MP3, of course. But,
yeah.
You know, but listening to the whole thing. And it's, you know, first song to last. appreciating it that way.
Yeah, I mean, it takes you on a journey. You get all these things.
Yes.
You're going up, you're going down. It puts you in a mood to one spot. And, you know, depending on what they want to do, do they want to gently bring you in or they want to jerk your chain somewhere?
Pound you right there. You know? So he sees that now. And he, like a lot of the bands, like Foster the People and stuff he listens to now, their albums are a little shorter.
Uh-huh.
They're the 40-minute. I'm even enjoying some of those new releases. I'm not going to, drive down the car and really blast them, but when he puts it in, I listen to it. I'm not that dad, all this sucks kind of thing. I enjoy it. You know, I can at least find value, unless it's, of course, Avenged Sevenfold. And but anyway, I just don't enjoy that particular style of vocal. But, you know, but there's certain things that, he will pick front to back that I just don't mind.
Well, even Avenged, I mean, their last one, there's a couple of songs on there that are...
Which one was the last one?
Something, what does it have, a king in the title?
That's the one. That's what I got them. I didn't mind that. To me, though,
there's probably like three songs on there that you can go, I know who they listen to. And then the other ones, you're going, what happened to the three I liked? It's probably where you broke out on it.
So here's what happened. Here's why I don't like Avenged. And no knocking them. Sorry, guys, if you happen to hear the podcast. My problem with that band and other ones like it is I hear Metallica. I hear five other bands vocally and sonically in there that I already own, you know, and his voice just doesn't hit for the power of that music.
Yeah.
His voice, which actually kind of like in a quirky way, it's not powerful enough, but I kind of like it in a weird sort of way, although it kind of annoys me in a weird sort of way. It's that one thing that's wrong that makes it right for me.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, M Shadows, you know, there's been albums that they've done that I've really not liked. And there's other ones that I've been, I kind of like this one. And then when they did this latest one, I really was thinking, bandwagon, kind of what you were just saying.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I've heard him interviewed and it was like, all right, this was an honest album. This came from a cool place. Like he came across like someone who was 20 years older than he is kind of a thing. It was like, wow, I was so impressed with just the interview with him and how he talked about things and everything. And it was like, even if I thought a week ago bandwagon, I get it.
And I wish I could talk more intelligently about the album. I just didn't pay enough attention to it. Other than knowing that I hear a track or whatever it was.
Right.
And I say to Drake, you know, that is, and I just pick whatever Metallica song it sounded like. Or metal. Actually, you know what? They have a lot of metal church sound, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, because metal church is a variation of Metallica. It's a little cleaner.
Yeah.
You know, and I hear those differences in there. And I go, Drake, I'll pick the CD off the shelf right there. It sounds just like this one.
Right.
And he gets mad at me because, you know, I'm being an ass at that point. I am.
He thinks
you're
pissing in his Cheerios.
And I am. Cheerios.
But you're right. I mean,
when that
album came out, there was a guy at work who came up to me and went, hey, Metallica got like a new single out.
Yes,
that's what he said. And I went, what song? And he said the name of it. And I said, see, you know, do me the chorus. And I was like, oh yeah. I went, no, that's Avenged Sevenfold.
Yeah.
He went, you're kidding me. And he's like, I'm going to go get it. Well, kind of what I said to you, you're going to like three songs on the album.
Yeah.
Because knowing he's like in the same age as we are, I said, you're going to like three. You're probably not going to like the other. Because I know the other stuff he like is like you too. He likes The Who.
Yeah.
A lot of other stuff. And not really into any of the more screamo type of things. I was like, I don't know. You're kind of a mixed bag on this one.
We're way off Trans-Siberia at this point.
We are.
That's my fault as usual. As my brain just wanders aimlessly through the abyss, you know? Say whatever comes to mind. Gets me in trouble a lot, actually.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, I, as you said, pissing his Cheerios a couple times. I don't like doing that to him because I know he enjoys it. But it's hard when he's all into it. And I'm like, Drake, you know, this came out 25, 30 years ago. And here it is right here. It's, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's his new music, quote unquote. But I'm sure if someone listened to our music enough that's 20 years old and loves back in 80-something, they could pull something from the 60s or 50s that sound just like, well, within reason.
Yeah, right.
You know, sonically not, but maybe the chord progression or something, you know, that was about the same. But
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of hard to pull thrash out of somewhere else.
Well, I'm talking even like the hard rock kind of stuff. Thrash didn't really exist. But, yeah, you can't make new thrash anymore, realistically. I mean, you know, everything's kind of...
I don't know. I mean, the new...
I'm saying this totally wrong. There's no...
Exodus is great.
Well, you like the big, fat, beefy sound that I don't like.
Before we went back to Exodus, the stuff that Steve was doing with Hatriot is also really good.
I guess I said it wrong. What I mean to say is there's no new genre coming out. There's no new instrument. There's no new sound that pushes it to the level. I mean, we just said 1987 was a game changer.
Right.
Even in the metal world, that was metal's already being... played and recorded, and that changed it.
Right.
You know, and then the keyboard stuff comes out a little differently, you know, early 80s. Early 80s changed rock in general and pop music and with the keyboard and video killed the radio star and all that kind of thing. And you're laughing, but it did, right? It changed everything.
It did, yeah.
And then disco was a little earlier, the sound of the whole
drum
machines. Yeah, and, you know, the 90s, drop tuning stuff came in, and you know, because I had to do something a little different.
Like the drop tuning, the seven strings. Yeah.
Then the precision, everything pitch perfect, everything note perfect. That was all the power metal bands that came out, and unrealistic drumming, in my opinion, in some cases. You know, and where do you go from there? And I haven't seen the new avenue to go from there. No. Matter of fact, what they're doing is they're going back to just being melodic rock.
That's the biggest trend that I've seen over the last 9 to 12 months. Really has been a lot of bands who are going back to putting melody in, you know, and as
that's what's been missing.
As I, you know, Josh Schwartz from A Sound of Thunder said ages ago on this show, which is, you know, that their whole goal was putting music back in heavy metal music. Yeah. And I do, a lot of bands, that's what it is that they're putting that melody back in there, and people are going,
wait a minute,
I like it?
This is deja vu. Did you say that in episode 97?
I quote him all the time on it. It's one of the best guest quotes I've ever heard from anybody.
Yeah. Well, like I said, the one I listened to was recently was the one when a singer leaves a band, I'm done.
Yeah,
you kind of picked it up.
Classic saying,
but it is, and for the most part, it's true. You know, the sound goes, whatever. But Case of Sabotage, aka Trans-Siberian, it's a whole array of singers, and you don't expect that same singer and that same sound. Actually, look forward to that different voice and a different track, you know, because it's a whole different mindset. Exactly. It's not Sabotage. It's now Trans-Siberian. Where are they bringing me today? Who's the player in today's game kind of thing, you know?
Yep.
You don't expect that raspy, gruff voice. You expect anything.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's true.
That's what made it different for me.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we should probably play a cut or something, huh?
Oh, well, we've been playing them all the way through.
Oh, so. I didn't hear it because we're talking.
That's right.
I know. You can cut them in later, but...
Cut them in. That's the magic of editing.
Yeah.
So, of course, you brought some...
Mostly for reference, so I can remember track names and years and whatnot.
Of course.
Look at album covers. But, yeah, I brought the 3 or 4 or 5 Sabotage albums.
That always sparked a discussion. So.
Yeah, well, let me grab them real quick. Okay. So... We already discussed a lot of this anyway, but I got Power of the Night with me.
Yeah.
Fight for the Rock, both of which I listened to today, driving in and out of work.
Awesome.
Yep. I got Haul the Mountain King, which I did not listen to. That's on the way home.
It's probably burned in. That one's probably burned in your brain at this
actually,
point.
Actually, you know what? Oddly enough, you know, the Gutter Ballet, I think, this is hard because this is a fall CD for me.
Yeah.
I can't explain. I bought it in the fall originally, and... Music to me is very time period based.
Okay.
And I'm going to have a real hard time in December listening to this album.
Let me remind myself. Is this one it's on?
Yeah, I'm weird like that.
Like this one's kind of, it starts to get a little bit of the change in here.
Let's call it mellow. I mean, it's kind of a mellow album overall. It's a mood setter to me. It's different. You know, it's
yeah. I mean, with, you know, Thorazine Shuffle on here. That one, whenever I see that one, I always think that should be a Queensryche tune.
Which one's the bonus track on that?
That should be Thorazine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So imagine that album without that on there, because I can't.
Yeah, it'd be just, you know, Mentally Yours. I mean, just, yeah, it's.
But it's not thrashy. It's hard.
Yes.
Right. So, and there's a whole bunch of fluff in there. Fluff meaning, in the sense of slower melodic piano movements in there. There's things that just bring you to a different world before they bring you up and down.
Right.
You know?
I mean, even the title track itself,
Got a Ballet,
yeah. is really, it's kind of that.
Oh, it's, yeah.
You know, but what saves it is John's voice.
Yes.
It's just, when he wants to punch on it, it's like you stand up and listen.
And then they got Dead Winter Dead, which of course has what on it? Christmas Eve Sarajevo.
It does.
Yeah. So, yeah, grandma's not buying that for the grandchildren. You know,
look no, at the cover. No.
But this one they'll buy for the grandchildren, the little boy looking at a Christmas tree.
And oh, absolutely.
It's all lit up and it's angelic and, you know, grandma wants to be whatever.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And this is not offensive to
yeah, I mean, you
child.
Look at that and you go, oh, wait a minute, is this another Fresh Air album? Is this another Fresh Air Christmas album?
This, yeah, one of those like out of the kiosk, what is this kind of
right.
thing? You know, anybody. And of course, you know, the artwork for Christmas Attic, very similar.
Very similar.
And they get a little more crisp on the artwork for The Lost Christmas Eve, but... Not a drastic departure.
No.
It's, you know, it's still in the realm.
Yeah, what's you know what I like about that one is, again, that they've got Chris's guitar on
Chris's
there.
Chris's guitar's in there, yep.
You know, which kind of has become a little bit of the symbol of TSO yep. as well, but that was...
In spirit and memory,
yeah,
yep.
You know, it's cool that they do that. I actually had a cool chat with John about that, because
yep.
obviously I have the same guitar.
Oh, okay.
And he yeah. was like, he's like, you still got it? And you yeah. know, it's the same color. It's just
yeah,
like,
same thing.
He was, yeah, so it was, yeah, we had a nice little talk about the White Charvel.
I don't know if they make this anymore, but the Trans-Siberian Orchestra I have has, you know, the cardboard sleeve around it.
Yeah.
With a big, thick booklet inside the cardboard sleeve, and of course the booklet inside the CD
right.
case.
Right, I bet that one's tough to get, if
well,
you can
yeah,
get it.
I bought it, like, probably the day it came out, literally.
Right.
Within the day, anyway. But I would buy these for people for Christmas. I mean, I'm that guy buying
sure.
these CDs for people for Christmas. They're usually $10 at Walmart, whatever.
Yeah.
It's pretty expensive. And people that always say, what's that song? I hear that you play that song, whatever. You know, you really enjoy that band. What's that band again? Or I made a Christmas CD it's Christmas 2006. You know, every year we made a
yeah.
holiday Christmas CD and had my son do the opening track and closing track. And 2006 theme was Trans-Siberian.
Mm.
I took every instrumental song off the three albums.
Okay.
And, you know, made an arrangement, you know, I like to yeah. make arrangements. And I didn't think I'd like it because I did it for the families. I didn't think I would like it because it didn't have the vocals that I'm used to hearing
yeah.
in the correct order. You know me, I'm very,
yeah.
the mind works with what's next. And I got to tell you, it's very impressive that for me that I really enjoy the album and
right.
and to hear a full hour and some small change of just instrumental and not hear the vocal was actually different and enjoyable.
Yeah.
Not saying I don't like the vocals because I really do.
Yeah.
I like the storyline.
But it'd be interesting if you would have liked it if you were a metal fan but had never heard any, like didn't have any other prior connection to it. I mean, you'll never know.
Yeah,
just like I'll never know.
Well, but... We made 12 Christmas CDs. Everyone had a theme.
Yeah.
And I actually really pushed that one off for a few years because I didn't want to, I just didn't want to do it. And I was kind of out of ideas in 2006. And of course I got more ideas after that. We did it in 2011, but that was a hard one. I actually didn't want to do it. I figured I'd never listen to it ever. I figured I'd do it for the family, never listen to it.
Yeah.
And it gets you know, cycles in my CD player, all the MP3 player at this point. But
cool.
Yeah, so anyway, if you put them all together, you can make a decent holiday album, just the instrumentals.
That is cool. But, I still kind of feel a little bit of John's aggravation of Savatage was freaking doing it. Like, what the hell?
How can you not? Okay, you know, we recorded one
yeah.
thing. Can you imagine if we changed our name to, you know, Friendly Fred and the Puppies and all of a sudden took off? I don't know where I came up with this shit, actually.
They still wouldn't let us play the Happy Penis song.
Probably not. We have to change that to be, you know, the Happy,
Beagle song?
Beatles or something, whatever. Make up something fluffy or whatever. But
yes, we did have a song called that. It was Jay's instrumental.
Yeah, it was more of a joke than anything. But
it was good between songs. We could laugh about what it was.
Well, you know, we had a couple of funny things, but... nothing making Christmas CDs, that's for sure.
Nope.
But, you know, if we change the name and all of a sudden the same exact music got popular, we'd feel a little bitter towards...
Oh, yeah.
You know, we didn't struggle like they did. I mean, you did. I mean, I was in a band a couple of years. You guys
right.
played for many years before me.
Yeah.
So I can't even say I struggled with the band because I didn't.
Yeah.
You know, but if you were struggling and playing the road and making albums, playing to 50 people in nightclubs after your album came out, whatever they did, you know, it'd be kind of hard to go from that to TD Garden.
Sure.
With the same exact music.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. With all kinds of funding and a huge show. And,
yeah.
And I mean, not to say that, you know, there's anything bad about TSO. I mean, they...
Oh, I'm not taking anything.
They do. I mean, not only do they, I mean, they spend an insane amount of work making an incredible show. Every year they pour more money into it. And they also give a crap load to charity everywhere they go,
yep,
which is also awesome. And even, you know, tickets prices are always very, very reasonable, mm-hmm, for them. I mean, they could easily make a massive cash grab and jack up the prices.
Yeah, but that's all bonus stuff, which is very admirable,
yeah,
which is great.
Yeah.
And you're right, they could... Yeah. Sell $250 a ticket.
I mean, even down to programs. I mean, they've always had a thing where Paul O'Neill has always said that the program has to be $10 or less, that he wants people to go to the show to be able to afford the program. And they put together great programs. And you see probably more people. I mean, you know, in the days we go to the heavy metal shows, right?
Oh, boy.
And how many people would have programs? I mean, people weren't buying tons of programs because they were more than the T-shirts.
Yeah, well... Well, okay, so let's rewind that for a minute. I went to limited shows over the years. I went to the very first Headbangers Ball Tour, and actually went to the follow-up to that, which had Sabotage in it, Nuclear Assault, Testament, and Sabotage.
Yeah, and you hated the big shows anyways. You liked the small, clubby shows.
Well, I kind of did. You can get a little closer. You can kind of, I don't want to be 16 sections back and can't make out the dot in the stage. I don't want that, you know. Yeah. And spend an insane amount of money to do it and fight the crowd out of there and fight the tea and fight the buses. Oh, God, just, you know, whatever. So, but T-shirts back when I was going to shows were $15, $20 maybe.
Yeah.
And that was back in late 80s, early to mid 90s.
Yeah.
Which by today's standard, I think they're, $40, $50 a T-shirt or whatever they are.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, some of them are actually nice, heavy-duty Gildans. They're really nice ones.
Yeah, and these T-shirts suck back then. These are the ones that as soon as you wash them, they twisted funny and whatever.
Yeah.
So... the baseball jerseys, you know, the Motley Crue baseball jerseys.
Yep.
And the programs, I never really looked at the merchandise that much. I don't want to carry it in a show. I don't want to hold something.
Yep.
You know, it's bad enough to roll a T-shirt up and stick it wherever, you know. So I didn't even buy many of those either.
Yeah.
I was pretty much, I didn't have a lot of money. I was a teenager. I was ticket poor going in.
Yeah.
And by the way, tickets weren't expensive.
No.
I mean, I saw, of all bands, Gwar at the Channel. I think it was $8, literally $8 a ticket. And it's Gwar, of course. So, you know, Scum Dogs tour. And there was like, eight bands that opened for them. I was there all day. $8.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I'm not sure at the height what they were getting. Probably, you know, maybe 30. Who knows? But I don't know what they were getting. But, you know, it's not like going to see, you went to see Aerosmith recently, right? Or whatever, last time around.
No, last time around it was ridiculous. I'm not paying like $250.
There you go. And Journey came around and I had someone that knew I was a big Journey fan. She was going to get me tickets and she... let me know the price. And I said, I am not, you're not buying me tickets to Journey. She said, yes, I am. I said, no, I'm not going.
Yeah.
That's insane amount of money. And it's realistically a cover band at that point because the singer left the band.
Right.
You know, it's not a Steve Perry led Journey. And not to say that, you know, Arnell at this point in time with vocally, I think is better than Steve. I think he's lost his range and whatnot.
Yeah.
I heard, but, and they're doing great with the albums, but no, not for $250. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
And then, of course, parking and teas. And that's for two people, that's an $800 a day to see a band. What, seriously? Really?
Yeah.
No. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But people do it. And that's their time out and they love to do it. And I just see no value in it. I really don't.
Yeah.
I'd rather take the $500 and get my son a PS1 or something. You know what I mean? And something to keep. And,
yeah.
But that's me. That's whatever. Off on a tangent.
Yep.
We'll be right back.
See, don't you miss this?
Of course I do.
Awesome. Cool.
Went off on a tangent.
So there you go, guys. You know, Jay, back in action, guest spot for our holiday show, and it's cool to have you back.
Okay. Thanks.
You know? And right
you
now...
Throw me out already?
Richie's going, what? When was Jay there?
In and out. Done.
But it is. It's. I've been fortunate that, you know, to be able to meet up with Richie, and he's kind of stepped into the breach after you left. It's been good.
My situation got ugly.
Yeah. No, but your shoes got filled well with Richie. Good. He's been a good partner. But it's great to get you back whenever I can and shoot the shit. And I'm sure for listeners, because they've been getting a steady diet of little bits of discussion with Richie and I, and then massive episodes of interviews. So I think a lot of people have been, you know, wanting a discussion show. So they got one this week.
Think how funny that is, because, you know, you've always been, when we first started this out, you were trying to get interviews. You and Dario trying, and, you know, new podcasts. I don't think there's a lot of interest. And you finally got some people bite here and there, and it started rolling, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, and now you do interviews all the time, and obviously people know the podcast. And I'm just so far removed from it. I have no idea what you guys, I really don't have no idea what you guys have done or doing. I haven't listened to any episodes at all pretty much since I've, you know, left. And it seems like, you know, you're doing the thing that I always joked about that I kind of even didn't want to do.
Well, that would be, you'd be like, what am I going to ask him?
Yeah.
Do they like a hamburger?
That was a joke. You know, you gotta figure, if you're in a band and, you know, you're going from station to station and tour to tour and interview, they're asking the same shit. How's your new album doing? What's for the future? It's like talking to a hockey player between periods, you know. What do you have to do to win the game? Well, we have to fucking score, you know? I mean, it's the same thing with you know, stop them to score. But
I think part of what we've been doing with interviews, too, and where we get a... Because there's two kinds of interviews, right?
Well,
there's the
20-minute
press junket interviews that, you know, you kind of get on the horse and get off the horse 20 minutes later. Mm-hmm. It's the stuff you hear Kreshi and his guys do every morning on The Buzz. You know, that's what it is. But the bulk of our interviews that we do, and the reason we get them, is it's really these things that are totally off of that schedule. And it's shooting the shit with people. It's talking
that's exactly
about
what I'd love. You know, I would love that more than, you know.
Yeah.
So, I haven't listened, so I made fun of it. I'm sorry. But, you know, I just don't want to ask them about their last album.
I mean, even as an example relating to this one, you know, when I talked to John Oliva, he didn't want the interview to stop, and that one there, we actually did have a defined time frame.
Okay.
But we ended up going down the rabbit hole time with the Beatles. I mean, we were bitching about our wives, and then we were talking, and then...
I don't have one to bitch about anymore.
And then when he found out about, you know, that I had the same book that he's really loving about the Beatles, that I had it, and pretty much was encyclopedic about it as well, we went right, and that's the kind of stuff we do a lot of that.
That's an awesome, to me, that's what... It's a person.
You know?
It's not that band person. It's a person.
And
I'd much rather learn something interesting that you don't know about the person in the band like that.
Yeah. And that's the kind of stuff we like to do a lot of those type of things where it isn't the schedule thing. It's on their own time, you know, and hey, does it last an hour? Does it last? I mean, Chris Tangarides, we talked to him for over 2 hours.
Yeah. You had two episodes.
We did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I think I only did two interviews or whatever.
You did Vic?
We did Vic and the photographer.
With Bill Hale?
Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we've had him on three times.
But I did one of them. I'm not sure which one.
Yeah,
but
the first one. Yeah.
I think that was all I've done for interviews.
So,
it hasn't been my thing, but it'd be interesting.
But it's cool. It's cool to have you back in and doing something. And knew we had fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always do.
I almost had fun this time.
Yeah, you had fun. You freaking know it.
I came close. I came really close this time. Maybe next time.
If I touch you, will you have fun?
Oh, God. No, gotta go.
If I put on a priest collar.
No.
All right, man. Well, like I said, I hope you guys enjoyed it. And for those of you, of course, who have only been with the show for a short time, and especially some of the people at the internet radio stations that we are happy to be on, guys, go back in time and... Jay's in a whole bunch of our earlier episodes.
Except for episode 10, the lost episode.
The lost episode. I've asked about that every so often.
That.
Yeah, and...
Where did it go? How did you lose it?
Yeah.
No, seriously, how did you lose it? You don't know where it went?
Oh. Yeah, it's gone.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, it happens, I guess.
But...
We had fun with the Iron Maiden album that night, if I remember correctly.
Did we?
Believe so.
Maybe.
We reviewed it.
We did.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we got a lot of bad feedback about that one.
Oh, we did?
You know why? Because we didn't play any cut off of it. So we talked about it, but we didn't actually play a cut out of it.
Probably
to my own defense, at that point, I wasn't editing the episodes. They were going up to Winnipeg for editing.
Well, in defense of that album, there was better Iron Maiden songs to play.
There were, but since then, I have kind of revisited that album.
Yeah, not a couple. There's a couple.
You know what it was? It was the long... See, we're going down the rabbit hole again.
There you go.
But it was the long intros.
Yes.
If you got rid of the intros, kind of like your whole thing about doing combining the two Queensryche albums. Mm-hmm. If you
three. There's three I was going to do. Here in the Q2K tribe.
That's right. Yeah. It was three. if you just cut the intros out, I thought it would make a better album. But yep. I've kind of revisited it, and I like it better now than I liked it then.
I'll agree with that, but it's still at any level is not what you would expect from Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, so it was lost for a reason, not sure, but maybe it's a good thing it's lost. I don't think we're too kind to that album that night.
All right, so anyways, hope you guys enjoyed little holiday special with my bud Jay, and of course remember to keep up with us at focusonmetal.net, focusonmetal.blogspot.com, and on Twitter, and yeah, occasionally I still do go up to Facebook and try to post.
What's Facebook?
I haven't seen
you on Facebook. I'm on like daily.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a post from you, I don't think, in a year. I just miss it, obviously, but
probably. Yeah. Well, I post more for the show.
Okay.
than I'm actually posting on mine.
Wait, are we actually friends on Facebook?
Oh, yeah, no, I still see I get notifications from you.
And, oh, yeah. I've been a roll lately. I've been on a tear, huh?
With your, yeah, you've been doing your photos and...
No, not even that. I've just been on a tear lately.
The other stuff, yeah. But no, it's up there.
I like throwing grenades and stirring the pot.
Yeah.
I do anything. You know, people that don't know my sense of humor and don't know what I'm writing can't hear the tone of what I'm writing. That's what makes writing fun.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you're an asshole, and you're really not being an asshole. Or the other way, you know, it goes both ways too. Yeah. But it's kind of funny the responses to certain things. But I'm going to use it just for photos this time. Yeah.
But all right. Well, until we talk to you again next week, this is Scott.
Oh yeah, I'm the J guy.
Yeah, you're the J guy.
Yeah.
And actually, it might be next week. I don't know. I'm debating. Am I going to take 2 weeks off? Because I could really use a break.
What night this goes? Tuesdays, right? This goes on. Tuesdays.
Nope. It goes up Wednesdays.
Well, there you go. Christmas Eve. There's the Christmas show. There you go.
Well, that's it. It's the holiday show.
All right.
Of course, it's on, it'll go on internet radio before that. But, you know, iTunes and everywhere else, it's Wednesday. But, yeah.
Oh, God.
So, until we talk to you again, have yourselves a good metal week, good metal holiday, and remember...
Focus on metal!
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.